Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Cooler temperatures are on the way. It is recent.
I know. I am celebrating because it's going to be nice and pleasant.
Yes. I have heard that by Tuesday, it might be in the low 80s, like 82, and maybe some showers coming.
I love that. Yeah. Well, and remember, not only is it football time,
yes. It
is fair time.
Oh.
The fair will be opening in Dallas, the big, big fair.
Really?
Oh, yes. You know, every year it opens, and it'll be a big, big deal when the fair opens. And, you know, people come from all over because the fair of Texas is just the biggest thing there ever was.
I'm always excited.
Yes, and Big Tex will be there. I mean, it's just so wonderful. And when you walk in there and you see Big Tex waving and talking and saying howdy, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal.
And it doesn't matter if you're 9 years old or if you're 60 years old.
Mm-hmm. It's a tradition that you can enjoy at any age, and then you pass it down to your children, and then your grandchildren, and their children, and then their grandchildren. It just keeps going. It's one of those things that the whole family has experienced at some point, for generations.
That's right. And if you've lived in Texas, you have to go to see what the new product will be at the fair every year. And the food there, you know, they have something new and exciting every year.
Yes.
They try something that has never been tried before and come out with it, and people just love it.
Well, I remember, didn't we talk about barbecue at the fair one time?
Yes, and, you know, they had the butter on the stick one year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have everything in the world.
Have you ever had butter on a stick?
No, I didn't do that one.
Yeah, me neither.
But they have, every year they have something really new and exciting. And, you know, some of these people have had the concessions at the fair for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of them. Well, you remember Fletcher's Corn Dogs?
Oh, yes.
You know, yeah, the father who invented that. And then his sons took over, and that's an old, old one at the fair.
Yeah.
And their corn dogs, you know, are bigger than most corn dogs.
Yes, I remember you talking about them one time, and they sounded amazing.
They are amazing. Oh. And, you know, the secret recipe has been locked up for years.
Yeah, you can't get to it.
No, where nobody can get to it. It's an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
But a fair time is just around the corner, and it's important.
It is. Fair food is some of the best. And the thing about fair food is you can't go to a restaurant and get it. Or even if you could, it wouldn't be the same because it's not at the fair. For some reason, ice cream is different at a fair. A funnel cake is different at a fair than it is, you know, any place else.
That's right. It's just the food tastes better. It's exciting. You're out there with millions of people, you know, walking along saying, which ride are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and which show are we going to go to? And, you know, they have the judging of the lambs and all that, and the cattle, you know, right at the first. They judge the chickens, the jellies, the quilts. I mean, this is old-fashioned stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It's almost like they still, and this kind of amazes me about the fair, is that they can take something that is you know, very old in tradition, and then put a slightly new modern spin on it, but you still, it's almost like there are times where you still feel like you're stepping back in time, but not so far that it's outdated. They still keep it current. It's amazing how they kind of balance that whole paradigm.
Well, it is, because, you know, it takes us back to, you know, to younger days, but it also brings us, you know, to the modern fair of today. And
yeah.
I love the whole concept that some things change and some things don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Big Tex has changed over in the years. You know, he didn't talk for a long time. He got where he talked. His Levi's got spiffier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his shirt. I mean, everything. And then, of course, you know, he got the new boots when he burned 4 or 5 years ago. And they redid him again.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then they've changed the voice of Big Tex.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of things do change, but hopefully we can all go with the new changes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you still got the heart and soul of the whole thing, you know. So when you see Big Tex and he may be in some new pants or some new boots, or, you know, he may talk or move a different way or whatever, it's a nice improvement. It's a little spin, but you still have the old tradition of Big Tex there. It's just a nice little, oh, wow, look at that. Look what he does this year. Look at that. That's cool. You know, you have that new spin on it.
Yes, and to know that every year he'll be right there.
Yes.
And so it is exciting, and you know that it's getting cooler when it's fair time.
Yes, yes.
So that's how you can tell.
Yes, and you can start to smell like fall types of smells, like apples and like pumpkin spice and cinnamon and things like that. And then you really, you know, the fall season starts to feed all of the senses.
That's right. And one other thing is, you can smell the fair before you get there.
I know.
You can smell all the aroma of the food.
I know. Isn't that the best? You can smell it in the parking lot. You can smell it for miles down the road.
I know. And everybody wants to get to that smell, let me tell you.
Yes. It's like, let your nose lead the way. Take me to the funnel cakes. Take me to the fried Oreos and everything else. Oh, it's amazing.
It is amazing. And it makes us all want to be young children again.
Yes, and even as adults, when you go to the fair, you still feel like a young kids again. You know, you see all the same rides, maybe a few new ones, but, you know, you see generally the same rides, and you remember, you know, doing that when you were a kid, and you remember different times and things like that. It's really, really cool.
It is cool, and it only happens once a year, so it is important.
Yeah, so you've got to go when it's here, because if you want to go in March to the fair, well, you're kind of out of luck.
You're out of luck. And all the school children, everybody gets out for one day all over Texas. They give a day off where you can go to the fair.
Mm, that's important, and that's
neat.
Cool.
It is. And all the buses line up out there. You'll see buses all lined up, you know, for the fair.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's great. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, I know last week we were talking, and you had said that you had some great, wonderful policies on the horizon, and things were happening. So what happened since we talked last?
Okay, we did three big policies last week. We're going to do three this next week. We've got $2 million policies and $1.5 million policy.
Really?
So we will be working on those starting Monday morning. We're going to be putting people in these. They're great policies. You know, one of them, the $1.5 million, is going to pay more than we usually pay on a policy.
Really?
Yep. So we'll be sending people out that information saying, this, you're going to want to get in it because it's going to pay 4% more.
Wow. Now, that's a big opportunity.
It is. It's going to pay 4% extra. So we're excited to be getting that policy in. And I understand it will be in, you know, first of the week. And we will first come, first serve, put everybody in it.
Wow. Cool. And I'm sure that one will fill up real fast.
I think it will when they find out, you know, that they can make 42%.
Goodness
gracious. I think
that
will get their attention.
Well, yeah, that definitely gets people's attention. That's a big chunk of change right there.
It got my attention, let me tell you.
What type of policy is that? Can you reveal that yet? Or
No, I can't. But we will just as soon as possible.
Okay. So once the ink dries, then we get into that a little bit further.
Yes, everything should be ready to tell, I think, Monday or Tuesday morning.
So now, as we go into the fourth quarter of the year, what should people be doing? Is there any kind of, like, you know, I mean, traditionally around the house, in people's lives, there are things that you do. You know, when it's springtime comes, you do your spring cleaning. When the, you know, summer comes, you do things, you know, to the yard to preserve it. And then in the fall, you know, as now we're into September, what should people be thinking about financially as we go into the last quarter of the year?
Well, they need to see where they are financially. I've had several people come in the last 2 weeks, you know, and they figured out that they need to be making more, but they wanted to do it conservatively because of their age. I had one fellow come in that's 60, He said, Faye, I'm through in 5 years. It doesn't matter what happens. I go, well, you're going to be awful young. He said, I don't care. 5 years, it's over. So I said, okay, how much do you have? Okay, he had $200,000. I said, well, then you have got to, you know, really get humping to get the kind of money you're going to need. And, of course, his wife will have, you know, has her IRA also, and that'll help.
Mm.
But they're going to need both of them because to him alone, they could not survive. They couldn't live on it.
Is
so
that,
he's got 5 years, you know, to get some pretty good money together.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. We usually talk about, you know, maybe one per. We don't really focus on this, I guess, either way. I guess it's just assumed that retirement will come from one person, maybe the main breadwinner. Is there a different dynamic when you have a husband and a wife who are both planning for retirement, investing and things like that? Do things change when you kind of disperse it over two parties as opposed to just one?
Yes, it helps, because if the husband, like in this case, he only had $200,000. So if she's got $100,000, it's going to help. Whatever she's got to contribute to her IRA, it will help a lot. And sometimes the wife has a pretty good IRA, and sometimes she doesn't. I've seen a lot of women, their IRA's less than $100,000, but then I've got quite a few of them that it's over $100,000, mm-hmm. which will help a lot. And usually we'll start out using his IRA first, then hers.
Okay.
So, and lots of times, if it's convenient, they both come to me, and I invest the husband and the wife's money, and that's when it really helps, because we're growing both of them at the same rate.
Okay. So there may be nothing to this. I don't know. I'm just going to throw this out here. I haven't really thought about it. It just kind of popped in my head while you were talking there. Is there, because I know, like, when people set up taxes, you know, it's like, are you going to file jointly or separately or married? You know, people do things like that to gain the most financial advantage is possible. So when people are investing and doing things like this, getting ready for retirement, is there any particular advantage over people doing, you know, maybe setting up an account, you know, together or separately? Is there any kind of dynamic where people can get a little edge?
Well, the edge is if you have a wife and she's got an IRA also, that is your edge, and a lot of people need that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people, a man may have $500,000 or $1,000,000. If he's got that much, then hers can coast. In other words, she can just put hers with us and let it ride. She's not going to be taking any money out of it anytime soon. But lots of times, they're going to need both incomes. And if they need both incomes, it's good that she has, you know, as much as she's got. If it's $150,000, $100,000, or $80,000, whatever it is, they're going to have to rely on both of these. So if they invest both of them with us, you know, we're growing it at the same rate of return, which will really help.
Do you have a lot of people that do that, or do you have mostly people,
yes,
just one person? And
no, we have a lot of people that that first the husband invests, then when the wife, you know, is ready to retire, they bring her over also. Because usually they don't retire at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So usually one of them will retire, then the other one. But usually the husband will bring his, and then later the wife will bring her account over.
Is that usually because of maybe a few years' age difference, or does one,
yes,
of them work longer?
Usually it is, and usually one of them will be working longer than the other one. And a lot of these retirement accounts, you cannot move until they do retire. Now, some people called me this week, and he could take like $89,000 out of his 401k, but he couldn't take the whole thing. And as you know, we require $100,000. And that's unfortunate, because I would really like to help him and you know, to have moved the money for him.
So when somebody's that close, we're talking about $11,000.
I know.
What did you tell him, or what would somebody do in that situation?
Well, I think in a few months he'll have enough, you know, by the end of this year probably, because he'll have more retirement going in to his 401k.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever he's short, he can probably pick that up.
Okay. And if there was like a holiday bonus or end of the year bonus, could he throw that in there and that help?
Yes. If he gets his year end bonus, then he will have enough to do it.
Okay.
And you know, everybody's, the last 2 or 3 years, they've been getting some really good bonuses, as you know.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, they've been $50,000 to $75,000.
With the state of the oil business right now and the layoffs that are going on and the over projections, what do you see happening? Do you see, you know, things recovering and people getting kind of back to normal ish, or do you see people, you know, taking more buyouts, coming to see you, investing, maybe doing other things? I don't know. What do
they
you see?
They are doing a lot of buyouts right now. They're trying to get rid of a lot of people. Like if they're 60, they're doing buyouts, you know, to get them off their books, because that's a lot of retirement they would have to pay if they kept them, as you know. So if they can do an earlier buyout, it's going to help the company. And also, they're getting rid of so many people right now. But I think it's going to come back because oil's going back up, look to me like, this week. If it goes up quite a bit, then, you know, they're going to change their mind. They'll go back to hiring people again. Mm-hmm. But they have laid off a lot of people. Then the others that they didn't lay off, they made them take a cut in salary.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
I know some people that had to take a cut in salary.
Oh, that's
They said,
nice.
The choices are you take the cut or we'll add you to the list.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people did take a cut.
For somebody in that type of a situation, and I don't know if it really matters, because when it comes to investing in life settlement, people do have to be accredited, so it may not even be an issue. But what would somebody do if, say, they're sort of on that borderline? They come and invest, and I know, you know, these investments are not liquid, and so they can't get to it. So what would somebody do if maybe they did take a pay and cut, and then they needed some more money to kind of offset that for daily expenses? What would somebody do?
Well, if they have their money with me, we make sure they have emergency funds.
Okay.
You have to have emergency funds. We've talked about that many times. We're not going to do this if you have nothing except what you're putting with us. You cannot do it. You have to have emergency money. You've got to have $25,000 to $50,000 in an emergency fund. And all of our people do. That's one thing about it. Even if our people are laid off, they have other monies. We always make sure of that.
Okay, so people are covered, you know, on multiple different grounds. It's because I know people get they get a little bit skittish when it comes to investing in really anything, especially, you know, the way the stock market is going these days. People are very anxious, and so I know if people are used to that type of an investment, they may be a little bit concerned, and they may say, well, you know, geez, you know, I'm going to put all this money in here, but I'm not going to have, you know, anything to left over to live on. That's not the case. You're mapping all this out so people are covered on all grounds.
That's exactly right. We want to make sure they always have extra money. And most of our people, you know, when they come to us, we just flat out ask them, okay, give us the scenario. You have this much in an IRA. You've got this much in your 401k. Your wife works, she has one. So we know where all the different monies are, you know, and that they do have extra money. And then we have a lot of people, as you know, are going to retire and just walk off from this fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
So if they walk off and say, you know, I've worked long enough, I'll just take retirement, that's going to make it easy. The ones that take retirement, we say, okay, how much are you going to need? And I had some people last week that put money with me, and they said, no, we've got enough to live on for a year. We don't need any money. Go ahead and invest all of this because we won't need it for a year or two.
Okay.
So that's when it's really good. Their house is paid for. Most of these people, you know, they're 60 years old, 55, their homes are paid for. So if they're laid off right now, they're going to be fine. It's the ones that don't have their house paid for, the younger guys, 45, 40 years old, their houses usually are not paid for. So they're going to have to be, you know, getting another job real fast. And, of course, all their wives, most of them do work. So that's going to help them out.
Okay, so people aren't completely out in the wind.
No, most of them are not. Now, there may be a few that have not invested wisely, and they may be up to their armpits in debt. Those are going to have a hard time.
When do you find that when people come to see you for the first time, you know, they're just really exploring investing and planning for retirement for the first time really ever, do you find that people are somewhat underplanned when they come see you? And it may not be intentional. It may just be, you know, they thought that things were going to be okay, or they thought they were on the right track, doing the right thing. Do you find that people are underplanned, or they're not really as prepared as they thought?
Lots of times they aren't. They don't have a plan. They just figured retirement would come, and it was just, you know, it's just going to be easy, and that's the way it was, you know. But then a lot of people, you know, have been paying attention all the time with their home and their car and all this, you know, trying to get it paid for as soon as possible. But then we have people that just, you know, they were buying up everything in the world and credit cards, and those people, lots of times we don't take them. If they're over heels in debt, you know, they've got to get that straight first.
Mm-hmm.
But most of our people are very conscientious. They're very conservative. So their house is in order, even if they're laid off.
So there are a number of people who have been really fiscally responsible since birth and, you know, have pretty much been born to do something like this and born to be, you know, financially set for life. But then for others who maybe haven't really thought about it, what does the general, and I know it kind of changes for each person, you know, depending on where they're coming from and what their needs are and all that, but what does the first general conversation look like for somebody who's never planned for retirement? Say they're maybe 45, 50 years old. They come to see you. They said, Faye, I retirement kind of scares me. I'm intimidated by it. What are you going to talk about? What kind of topics are you going to cover? What are you going to ask them?
Well, we're going to ask them what their goal is. Like 10 years from now, if you're 45, how much do you want to be making? How much are you going to need to make? You know, or how long are you going to work? You know, we've got all these people that this last year said, I'm 59, I'm out of here. I'm not working anymore. I'm not going to do another thing.
Hmm.
And, of course, you know, I don't think that's great at 59 years old. I think if you're 59, you need to work a little longer.
Because people get bored?
Yes, they will get bored. If you're 59, you're too young. I mean, you've got a lot of living to do, and you need to be working. Maybe not what you've been doing. Maybe you need to do something different. But at least I think you need to be busy bringing in a paycheck.
Yeah. Do you recommend people in that type of a situation? Because I know people, you know, they go to work, they're burned out, they're tired, and just the thoughts of going another 5 or 7 years may just be daunting. They may not want to get up in the morning, you know, thinking, oh,
that's right.
Can't go back to that same place another day. I can't stand it. So somebody in their late 50s, 59, even 60 or so, would you recommend, what do you recommend them do? Just tough it out or go find another job, start their own job? What approach would they take?
Well, I would switch jobs if they can. Right now might not be a good time to do that. Or it might be the greatest time. If you're really fed up with the company you're with and everybody's being laid off anyway, you might see if you can get a different job. Something you like where you will work longer. Because if a person is happy at work, he'll work a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
If he's unhappy, he's not going to do it.
And here's why I ask, is because as we go through the years, as time starts ticking, as we get a little bit older, people get faced with that crossroads of, gosh, you know, I'm too old to start over. And so
I've had people say that to me a lot of times. They say, I cannot start over. Well,
yeah.
And really, they're talking about their money. If they lose a lot of money, they say, hey, I can't go out and start over. You know, I don't have time to make enough money to make up the IRA, mm-hmm, or my 401k, you know.
So what would you say to them? Is there a cutoff age?
Well, it depends. You know, some guys are old at one place, and some are not. You know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it kind of depends on the person.
It depends on the person, how active they are. Sometimes a guy, you know, at 70 years old, we've got several people working at 70 that are just as active as heck. We have one guy that's a welder, and, you know, he's making a ton of money. I mean, he has been. He may not be now that, you know, things are down a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's a specialty field. He's a specialist in it. He's great at what he does. I mean, he makes $2,500 a day.
Yeah, that's insane. The rates are outrageous for welders.
The rates are outrageous. But he goes out there at midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning, and he'll fix that rig.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, so it kind of depends on where people are, where they want to go, and each individual case is different. So when it comes to retirement, I know people get a little bit intimidated by it. It's a little bit scary, and they're thinking, gosh, you know, I'm 45, I'm 50 years old, I haven't done anything. You know, my parents said I should have, you know, started investing when I was, you know, in college, and I should have started a fund, and I didn't, and now here I am, and oh my gosh. Faye, what do I do? I'm 49 years old. I'm starting to think about retirement. I haven't done anything as far as retirement. I don't want to get into the stock market because that's just scary as all get out. What do I do, Faye?
Well, I would think that you need to come in. We need to talk about it. Let's see what we can do, you know.
And so really it's just a matter of getting off the couch, having a conversation, seeing where people are, seeing if they're accredited, seeing if they can get into the program. And the big program, and correct me if I'm wrong, but really the biggest program I think that a lot of people like is investing in life insurance policies. So people who may not know, people who, you know, who maybe they've heard, maybe they're not really familiar with it, maybe they don't know anybody who's already done this. How does a life settlement type of investment work? How do people make money off an insurance policy?
Well, these are people that have stage 4 cancer, and they are interested in selling their policy because they know that this is, you know, not going to turn out real well. And they need the money for treatments, and treatments, you know, are over $100,000 a month now. They didn't used to be, but they are. So they come to us, and then we bid on these policies. If we get the policy, then we send an email to our clients and say, this is what we would recommend you put in. It may be $80,000 or $90,000 on this policy. And then we give them all the information, what kind of cancer it is, how long they've had it, how it's coming, and we give them all this and say this would be a good investment. So they're going to make the difference between what we paid for that policy and the face amount.
So that's where the profit margin comes from.
The profit is. It's between the face amount and what we paid for that policy. Okay. And then the nice part is the bank handles all this. We don't handle anybody's money. We never have. We send a check to Nevada Trust if it's a check. If it's a rollover and they come to us and roll their money over, we're just rolling it from their 401k or their IRA over to Nevada Trust. Then Nevada Trust, we set up an escrow for every premium dollar that's going to come due. That way you always know your premium will get paid. So then the bank pays the premium. When the policy matures and the person passes away, the bank gets a certified death certificate, sends it to the insurance company, and they pay. And they write the check, one big check, $5 million, $1 million, whatever it is, to the bank. Then the bank puts it in everybody's account. And we do this over and over again. That's the way it works.
It's very streamlined, very simple process.
It is very simple. And, it takes 6 to 8 weeks usually. We've had a couple of cases lately that have taken a lot longer because the state of Texas is now taking 4 months to get us a death certificate.
Wow.
And Pennsylvania is taking that long. I don't know why, if they've had that many deaths or if the state of Texas doesn't have enough help.
Hmm.
I can't figure out which it is. If they don't have enough help, you know, or what it is.
Yeah. Now, anyway,
that's what we've been doing.
You found ways, though, around that, because I remember in the last couple of weeks, you went straight to the source and took care of that little delay, didn't you?
That's right. We had two of them, and everybody, it finally came to my attention that these were way overdue. So, you know, we called the funeral home. They said, oh, we can go down to the courthouse. I said, oh, really? So we were sent FedEx to the courthouse, and we got the death certificates.
Wow.
And we now know you can beat the system, and you don't have to wait for Texas anymore. And you go to the courthouse where they live.
Now that's making stuff happen right there.
Well, you know, I hate it when we go over because some bureaucrat doesn't want to give us, the death certificate.
Yeah.
So we've changed that now. Now we know we can go direct to the courthouse if it's El Paso or Laredo or wherever it's at.
All right, so you can take care of that in a lickety-split. So for somebody
That's
who
right.
comes to you for the first time, let me ask you, what's the number one question a new investor asks when they come see you for the first time?
Well, they want to know exactly how it's going to work. How the, you know, from the money standpoint, how long does it take to get invested? Well, you know, there's been times it took a little longer. And then there's been times that we were ready to go right out of the box. So I always tell them, if everything's working right, you know, we'll have you invested in 2 to 3 weeks. If it's one of those long deals where we're waiting on contracts, it could take longer. Right now, we've just gotten all these contracts. As I said, we did 3 last week. We're going to do 3 this next week. And this is over $3 million this week we'll be doing.
Wow.
So people can get in a great policy. They can make money. I also sent out letters this week to people who hadn't invested, and they've got $300,000 sitting there. And I don't want to tell tales on wise, but this one guy, I sent him a letter this week and said, you know, you're not making money when you're not invested. He calls the office. He said, why haven't you been sending me anything to look at? And I go, uh-oh, the wife is the one that's been turning them down.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and so the husband wanted to do it and wondered why we hadn't been sending him anything. So you can get caught up in these deals sometimes. The wife is saying no, and the husband is wondering why in the heck we haven't offered him any policies.
I bet they had a conversation after that.
I bet they had a conversation. So, you know, if there's a reason, come and tell us.
Right.
If there's something wrong, tell us. You know, whatever it is. We also got a call this week from one of our clients that got cancer back in the summer. And his wife suddenly says, I'll be handling this. And so we said, we better call. And unfortunately, he's in the last legs of his cancer.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry to hear
that. Yeah, we are too. And he's a great guy. We have loved having him as a client. And he even set up trust accounts for his children with us. So everybody is invested. But he said yesterday that they gave him 35 days.
Oh, my goodness, 35 days.
35. I've never had anybody say that.
Wow.
I've never had a client say, you know, we've got this very, very short window.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, it can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're always shocked about these things, but that's what the business we're in.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we buy these policies also, you know, we don't know, you know, if they say it's 20 months, if it's really 20, if it's going to go over or if it's going to come in early. And, you know, a lot of them do come in early. People can go to our website and check that out and see, you know, how the policies are coming in, if they're on time, if they're late, or if they're early.
Yeah, you've got
to remember
this.
Yeah, they always get paid. If it's early, you're going to get the same amount of money. If it's on time, you still get that same amount. Or if it's late, you'll still get paid the same amount. You never get less.
So let's address the elephant in the room. For the person who's listening for the first time, and just now soaking this in for the first time, I'm sure they're asking themselves the obvious question of, okay, Faye, if I come see you as a new investor, how much can I make and when can I make it? How fast will this take?
Well, if it's a 20-month policy, you'll get paid in 20 months, apparently. And it's 1% a month. Except for that big policy that's coming in this week, it's going to pay 4% extra, first time in our life. But if it's a 20-month policy, you know, you're going to make 20%. If it's 24-month, you're going to make 24%. It's 1% a month.
And it's $100,000 minimum, right?
Yes, it's $100,000 minimum.
Okay.
And so if it's 24 months, you're going to make $24,000. And it beats, I think, most investments because you know how much you're going to make going in. You know what the risk is going in. You know everything about it. And, of course, there's 3 risks with every policy. The first risk is that it could go over. If it goes over, you're responsible for paying the premium, okay? The second risk is you have to have other money available. Because remember, your cash is tied up during the time it's in your policy, okay? And the least risk of all, which is almost non-existent, is if a life insurance company ever went under, it would take a little longer to get your money because we have the Texas Guarantee Fund, which guarantees these. But we have never had a company go under in Texas. These are huge, huge life companies, and someone always buys one if it gets in trouble. We've only had one that I know in the last 5 years that was downgraded. It wasn't really in trouble. It was downgraded, and someone came in and swooped it up.
Okay. So if people are, you know, they're hearing this and saying, okay, you know, a company may go, quote, go under. It's not like there's a guy with a van who's going to take the money and run. Somebody could come in and buy it.
That's exactly right. And it doesn't take long to turn it around.
Wow. All right. So when you mentioned people may have to pay the premiums, you were going off this $24,000 profit scenario here. When somebody hears that for the first time and they say, well, gosh, if I have to pay the premiums, that could eat up my entire profit. But that's not the case at all, right?
Well, it hasn't been, no, because most of the premiums are very moderate. They're not usually high premiums. And you know going in what the premium is. We always tell people, if they say, Faye, what is the premium on this? I may say it's $2,000. It might be $2,900. Or I may have to tell them it's $19. We did two of these policies we did this last week. When people found out how much the premium was, they were saying, No, I want $100,000, not $80,000. I want $100,000 in it. Because the premium was almost non-existent.
Wow.
And then I bid on a policy this week that has no premium.
Really? And did they have the rider in place?
Yes, and sometimes they do. And when that rider is in there saying, if you get ill, you know, we pay all premiums. So this one, that I'm bidding on, we don't have it yet. There'll be no premium whatsoever.
Wow, that's
amazing.
We have
that every once in a while.
Wow, that's
and that makes it even a better deal. You know, if you have no premium, you don't ever even think about it.
Yeah, more profit all the way across the board. So
that's right.
All right. Well, it sounds like a pretty straightforward deal. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and sometimes we talk about Texas history. Sometimes we talk about a place to put on your bucket list. Sometimes we talk about random topics. So what is our topic this morning?
It's about onions.
Ooh, onions.
I knew this was going to shock you.
I know.
Okay. Onions is the leading Texas vegetable.
No way. Are you serious?
I am so serious, you would not believe it. Everybody thinks it's tomatoes, cantaloupe, all this other. It's not. What do you think onions bring in per year?
I'm going to say $100 million.
You're exactly right. You've never
serious?
Been that spot on.
Oh, wow.
They bring in $100 million a year.
Holy smokes.
And then they say, if you'll figure crating, trucking, and all those little stickers they put on them, it's $350 million a year.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, I would not believe this in a million years.
No, me neither.
Now then, where do you think onions came from?
Oh, boy. I'm going to fail this question. I'm going to say someplace south, someplace in the middle of the state towards the south.
No. They originally came from Bermuda.
Not at all what I would have guessed.
No. They came from Bermuda, and they planted them in Cotillia in 1898.
Really?
And then they started getting them from the Canary Islands also. And they used Canary Islands also until 1946.
Huh.
And can you imagine? I had no idea that onions came from other countries. I guess I just always thought we had them.
I know. I didn't realize that they were, I guess a foreign vegetable. I'm like you. I thought they just kind of came from here, or really, to even simplify things, I thought they just came from the grocery store.
That's the new modern look, okay. It just came from the grocery store. Well, in 1888, it was called the White Bermuda, and it was exported from Bermuda, and it's actually Italian original.
Really?
Originally from Italy. By way of Bermuda. I would never believe that in a million years.
No, me neither.
Now then, way back then, after Cotilla in South Texas started raising onions, they were shipped to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
That was their market. The market was in Wisconsin. I would never believed it. And they would say, you know, we need more onions. In 1907... over 1,000 boxcar loads of onions were shipped from Southwest Texas.
Huh.
1,000 boxcars. It doubled production, and in 1917, 7,000 boxcars were shipped.
Really?
And then the whole deal was in 1946. This is the biggest year they were shipping out of state. 10,164 boxcars.
Wow.
Now then, the Canary Islands couldn't even keep up with the Texas demand for onion seed.
Huh.
And a lot of people were growing them wrong, making all kinds of mistakes. And then the Texans started importing seed from Spain.
That's insane.
It is, absolutely. And this was called the Grano, G-R-A-N-O. These arrived in Texas in the Rio Grande in 1933. And they called it the Texas Grano 502. And it is known as the mother of all sweet onions.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And it's been grown... I mean, I'm just shocked.
I didn't...
That the Texas onion, the lowly onion, made all this dadgum money.
I had no idea. I mean, you don't think of it as one of these, you know, major iconic, you know, money making opportunities. It just doesn't. I don't know why. I think maybe just because they're small, and usually we eat them cut up in small pieces, or they're hidden in food, and we don't even realize how much onions we actually use. I guess.
I guess we have no idea. Like you said, you thought they all came from the grocery store. Oh, my gosh. You and the school children, right? Oh, my gosh. But I had no idea that we were getting them from Spain. Even.
Me neither.
In the 30s. I mean, we're getting them from Spain.
Huh.
How did we... I mean, that had to be hard to do in the 30s to get a seed all the way from Spain over here to the Rio Grande Valley.
I would think that would take an awful lot of logistical planning.
It would, and you had to wait on these ships to come over here.
Yeah.
So no telling how long it took for us to get the onion seed.
Wow.
But I cannot believe it's, when you take everything in consideration, packing, crating, everything, it's $350 million a year.
Wow.
And you wouldn't even think those little onions are being shipped everywhere now.
No, and then they make other things out of it. You know, they make they put it in different like packages of seasoning, and then they make like onion powder and onion flour and things like that. I guess maybe it has to do with all the other external products that they make out of onions.
Well, that could be it. But I know that I had never heard of this. I'm kind of like you. I always thought that the farmers just raised them. I didn't know where they came from.
Yeah.
I guess I just always thought the farmers, you know, I saw them pulling the onions up out of the ground. So I just assumed that they had always been here. I didn't know they, you know, came from all these different countries, from Bermuda, the Canary Islands, and then finally from Spain.
Yeah. It seems like onions would be kind of like grass. You know, it's just always just there.
Yeah, it's always been there. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
And I bet most people in the country do not know that all these onions came from these other places.
Yeah. I didn't have a clue. In fact, I didn't even know. I guess now that I think about it a little bit deeper, I didn't even know that you could trace it back to a specific place. You know, Italy, and then the tropics, and then up here. I didn't realize that they could trace it back to an actual origin geographically.
Well, apparently they wrote it down. You know, it was written down somewhere. You know, where they were getting their onions, and all this was written down, and people had access to all this, and that's how they knew.
Hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, it was all in the Rio Grande Valley where they grow, you know, most of the vegetables. And so these people started right down there in Cotulla growing these onions.
Hmm.
And I don't know who the smart person was that started this that said, you know, I can get these imported. How did he find the people in Bermuda and all these other places, Canary Islands, to import them?
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that.
I don't know. He would have had to have taken a trip or something and then tracked somebody down. And it's not like when they started all this, you know, there wasn't, you know, Google.
That's right. They did not Google it and find it. I mean, in my opinion, it was some guy on a ship came over here and had the seeds for sale.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened. But to think of it, to start with, in the early years, they were shipping it to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That's amazing.
Thousands of boxcars, 10,000 boxcars sent to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Could you imagine how a train car full of onions would have smelled going by?
Yes, I can.
Make you cry all the way into next week.
That's right. They darn sure knew what they were shipping, didn't they?
Very interesting. Now, I guess now I'll never look at onions the same again.
No, you'll know that they didn't just come out of the grocery store. You'll know that they were really grown somewhere. And you'll know now that they started with a seed, which I didn't know that part.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So they all started with seeds that were imported many, many years ago.
Wow. That's amazing.
And they finally got where they didn't need them, but I can imagine. They said they couldn't keep up with the Texas people wanting the seeds.
I'm sure. Wow.
And so you have to have fresh seeds every year. How about that?
Yeah. That seems like it could take a little bit of maintenance, but boy, it's worth it. So, interesting. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So is it fair to say that when we're talking about investing in life insurance policies, because we see all the time about how companies will go on and they'll buy people's policies and they'll go, you know, traveling around the world, is it safe to say that you have found the most profitable type because you're only bidding on stage 4 cancer policies? You're only buying those because of the, the short term before the policy expires. Is that accurate?
I think it is because, you know, we don't do 5 to 7 year ones. And I know a lot of people will buy those that are 7 years. And I don't understand it, but that's their niche. And our niche is buying policies that the people have cancer that we know they'll be short. You know, they're usually under 36 months.
Okay. I guess as long as that's their niche, that leaves more policies for you to buy. So I guess we'll take that all day.
That's right. And sometimes we'll do a blend. And I don't know if all of them understand a blend. A blend means we've got two reports, and we blend them together and use one factor on it, okay?
Mm.
So if I've got one that says 18 months and 24, we'll blend them together, and we may say it's a 20-month.
Okay.
Okay, so we just blend those two reports together.
Okay, so now if it does come in earlier, say you have a 20-month policy, say it comes in 15 or 16 months instead, it comes in early, people still get the same profit, they just get it earlier.
That's exactly right, they just get it earlier.
So let's zoom out for just a minute to see, because we've been hyper focused on the policies themselves, but we're talking about a retirement plan, and we're talking about how this is really a wonderful conservative way to grow your wealth so that you can retire happy, wealthy, and early if you want to, or if nothing else, at least on time, you know, and you are in good shape for retirement. So let's zoom out a little bit and talk about how the whole process works on an overall basis. This is not one of these types of investments where people will come in, invest in one policy, they'll get a bunch of money, and they'll go off and retire. This is a plan that happens over several years, right?
Yes, it is. And they may have six, they may have 10 or 20 policies, and all these policies, you know, maturing and maturing, and you get paid every time, and you're increasing your holdings every time.
So with people are, I guess they have a wide portfolio. They're in a number of different policies. On average, what would you recommend an average person with an average investment? How many policies should they be at any given time?
Well, they should be at least six. Okay. And a lot of people have a lot more.
All right.
We don't have hardly anybody with under six policies.
So,
and as I said, most of them have 10 to 20.
When you set this up, do you put people in all, say, six policies at one time, or do you kind of stair-step
yes.
them?
No, because people want to get their money fully invested right then. They don't want to sit here and wait with cash on hand.
Okay, so get in, and then once people are in all of their policies, then you know some will come in earlier, some will come in later, and that's when it kind of fans out a little bit. And so people are policy will mature, they'll take that, they'll reinvest it in another policy, and then another policy will mature. That's kind of how it works. It, from that point, it kind of fans out, right?
Yes, it does. And one policy to another one, and another one, and another one.
Okay, and to be in a part of the program, you have to be accredited, which means?
Which means you either need to make $200,000, including bonuses, or you need to be worth $1 million without your home.
Okay.
So it can be either way.
As somebody's running some rough numbers right now in their head, they're thinking, okay, this is a good program for me, or maybe it's not a good program for me. I'm not quite there yet. What other alternatives are there as far as retirement planning?
Well, they can do annuities. We do a fixed annuity. We do an index annuity, but we do not do variable annuities. Variable annuities have mutual funds in them, and that means they can go up, they can go down, and you can actually lose some of your principal. But with a fixed annuity, your principal is safe. Your interest is locked in when you get it. So the interest can't go back down. When you make interest, it's locked in. And, of course, the companies that we use, if you had an emergency in the third year, you can take all your money out.
Right.
And that's a good thing if you had an emergency. But the other thing is, if some years you didn't take any money out, the next year you can take 20% out.
Oh, okay.
But usually it's 10% a year, every year.
So it kind of rolls
for
over
the rest of your life.
All right. Okay, so for the life settlement program, somebody's looking at this and they're saying, okay, this is going to be great. However, I'm like 52 years old and I haven't done any kind of investing yet, so I'm really starting from scratch at age 52. Is that too late or a good year?
Oh, no, that's a good time to start. I mean, I always say 80 is too late to say let's start getting money. You know, if you're 80, you should have a good portfolio by this time.
Mm-hmm. And when people come to see you for the first time and they're thinking about retirement and they're going into this, people always have, or not always, but most of your people already have houses paid off, cars paid off. They're not stacked up in debt. Those who may be close, you recommend they go ahead and get these things paid off a little bit first?
It depends. If they only owe $30,000 or $40,000, probably not. If it's just a small amount,
okay,
you know, it'll be fine.
So people don't have absolutely zero debt, right?
No. Most people, if they're 60, they have no debt. Their home is paid for. The people that came to me the other day that had just retired, they were fixing to pay their house off. They went ahead and put their money with me, but they had this extra money to pay off the home.
Cool.
So they're set. Once that house is paid for and everything else, you know, and your money's invested, you're in great shape and you don't have anything to worry about.
Okay. So for somebody who's been in the stock market for a number of years, they're worried about, you know, they get up in the middle of the night, they're worried if they have anything left, if their portfolio has changed, if they're, you know, in bad shape. You know, anything in the world can affect an investment on Wall Street. But with a life settlement, nothing affects it. So they don't have to be up in the middle of the night. They don't have to worry about any crisis that may happen overseas. What makes a life insurance policy not be affected by anything else like on Wall Street?
Because it doesn't have the ups and downs of Wall Street. It doesn't have the pressure of the market every day. It doesn't have the pressure of what's going on in the world. If you buy a life insurance policy, it's just a life insurance policy. It is insuring your life or someone else's life. That's why insurance is different. When you buy an insurance policy, it's going to pay off the face amount at death. It's just that simple.
So it's not a very, when you sign up for, say, you know, $1 million life insurance policy, it's going to pay out $1 million, and it doesn't matter. It's not like somebody can decide one day, you know, if you pass away tomorrow, we're going to pay out $25,000. It doesn't work that way.
No, they pay out the face amount every time. There's never any problem with it. That's why I think it's a good investment, because when you buy a life insurance policy with us, you know how much you're going to make. You know it in advance. You know, it's all set in stone. They're not going to discount it. You'll get what they say the face amount is. You'll get what your profit is. That's why it's different than any other investment that I know.
So people come in, they invest, they basically wait for the policy to mature. When it does, the paperwork is all done, money goes into their account, and they reinvest, right?
That's exactly right.
Cool. All right, Faye, so for somebody who's thinking about coming to see you, what should they get together before they come? Or should they just not even worry about it, just sit down and have a conversation?
I can do it either way. It's usually a good idea for you to bring your statements. Let's see where your money is, what it's invested, how it's invested, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, and you have availability for appointments this coming week, yes?
I do.
Fabulous. So, Faye,
we have several policies for them to invest in.
That is true. That's a big deal because those are big policies, and so this is a good opportunity for people not only who are already investing, but for people to get started because
of that. That's exactly right. $3 million. Should take care of everybody for the week.
It should. All right, Faye. So for those who want to come make an appointment to come see you one last time, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330.